Hello and welcome back to another special episode of Behind the Story. This is the podcast where we talk about the true stories that inspire famous horror movies, but after our summer season is over, we release three themed special episodes to make sure that you guys don't forget about us. But first, introductions are here. I'm Yeshua Upasani, a paranormal ghost-loving believer.
And I'm Arthur Ganathan, your neighborhood-friendly skeptic. Now, happy Valentine's Day to everyone. Today we have some really special scary stories for you guys, and you guys are going to have to guess whether they're true or false, along with Yeshvi and I.
And now, for clarification purposes, this has followed our recurring theme for the past two special episodes, which go listen to if you haven't, where we tell each other scary stories that we found online, and some of them are true and some of them are not true. To make this more fun for you guys, feel free to play along after we tell our stories and send us a little message whether you think they were real or not. Also, once again, even more clarification, just because something is in third or first person does not mean that it is true or not true. Now that that's out of the way, where will you send us this message telling us what you think on our social media accounts? Of course, that will be at Behind the Story on Instagram with a period between the I and N, and on Twitter with an underscore between the I and N. And of course, you can always respond to our Spotify poll question, which is asking about whether you guys have any weird Valentine's Day scary experiences.
And of course, getting into the stories, I'm going to go first this time because I think mine is absolutely amazing.
Okay, coming in cocky.
Mm-hmm. Steve, the man who would become my second husband, thought he had heard everything he needed to know about my first husband, Rob, that he had died at 37 unexpectedly of a heart attack, that we had met in college, that I'd stayed in touch with his family, that we had been married 10 years, that the experience of his trying to teach me how to parallel park had so traumatized me that I remained phobic about parking. Steve understood that I had a history, a previous life. He had one too. He'd been divorced 6 years before meeting me. The two of us were on a weekend trip to Charleston, South Carolina, a city I had visited with Rob. I was trying not to push my memories of must-sees, but I envisioned Steve walking the promenade along the Battery with me, admiring the antebellum mansions overlooking the water, our steps perfectly matched in a quintessentially romantic moment. We had taken a tour earlier in the day, and when the guide recommended a stroll along the promenade, I used his suggestion as the excuse for my own. The houses we passed were vast, boxy mansions, as lavish, as importantly grand as wedding cakes, with columns and pastel paint and porticos and wrought iron. Maybe it was how our tour guide's gossipy stories of past and present intertwined melodramatic deaths with mournful ghosts, having learned tourists tip better on ghost stories. Hand in hand in the sunny afternoon, the houses swelling on one side of us as water sparkled on the other, with Fort Sumter on the horizon and dinner plans for shrimp and grits, I asked Steve, "Have you ever seen a ghost?" He fumbled an answer that he hadn't, but he didn't necessarily believe in ghosts, while also not disbelieving in them. Of course, he ping-ponged the question back, "So have you seen a ghost?" I knew it wasn't supposed to be a real question, just as I had surely known that once I asked him, he would ask me in return. "Yes," I said. A pause. "Yes? Is that all?" I want to say that a cloud charged overhead, but the sky remained luminous and blue, and then a chill snaked my spine, sending that shut the hell up warning. I want to think that I reconsidered for half a second the story I was jumping in to tell, because it wasn't the casual story pulled from my repertoire. I had a perfectly fine and safe story about a ghost, waking up one night to a green glowing presence in the bedroom, so forceful I thought someone had broken in. With embellishment, it's a good story when I spin it. Like the tour guide, I understand that people tip on ghosts. But the story I was going to tell wasn't safe, and it wasn't actually a ghost story. I don't go around telling this story, not even for a couple of drinks, but I told it anyway, fearlessly, perhaps unwisely to my boyfriend, how, after Rob died, the only thing I'd wanted was some sign of him, how I knew I'd survive this awful thing if I had just one tiny sign. His face peering around the corner, or his voice, just something I said. I couldn't imagine that Rob wouldn't do that for me. But he died on a Sunday, I explained, and there was nothing when it happened, and there was all these people around, and I was waiting and waiting and still nothing, day after day. I was praying. This is when I was a practicing Catholic, I told Steve. So I would literally get on my knees, in church, at home, at the side of my bed, literally drop to my knees and beg God to give Rob a sign that he was okay. I mean, whatever okay means in this context. That was where Steve found a convenient excuse to drop my hand. Itchy nose, lash in his eye. But I plowed ahead, telling him about a garish purple fleece bathrobe that Rob had given me for Christmas because he was the hugest Northwestern Wildcats football fan in college. Their colors, purple and black. I wore that purple robe a million times, washed it a million times, I said. And there was a white nightshirt of mine that Rob loved, kind of Victorian, with buttons and lace in the placket. My fingers trailed down my chest to show where the placket went, and that I'd also washed a million times. The week after Rob died, I wore it every night to think about him. I told Steve how exhausting that week was, friends and family crowding around, asking how I was, no sleep, waiting 5 days for the memorial service because our church was booked up. 5 days was forever, I said. The morning of the funeral, I still hadn't had a sign. I paused, sucked in a breath. Steve was silent, so I pretended he was wrapped. After my shower, I went to the bedroom, hung up my robe, about to shove my nightgown in a drawer, when I looked down and saw a jagged splotch the size of a fist, right where my heart would be. I looked at Steve. He was squinting because of the sun. He hadn't spoken or even murmured a half-hearted go on. That was my sign, what I'd been waiting for, that purple stain. I fell to my knees, I said, and almost cried again as I told Steve how I was sobbing then, thanking God over and over. There was no way dye rubbed off in that robe that had also been washed a million times. No way, I said quietly. Rob did that. Wherever he was, I knew he was okay. Steve spun around and began walking, fast, off the promenade, into town, towards the hotel, to where the houses were only old, not old and haunted. I hurried after him. You shouldn't have told me that, he said when I caught up. You'd asked if I'd seen a ghost, I said, a lame response. That story freaks me out. He folded his arms against his chest. I want to forget it. I want to never have heard it. No one hardly even knows the story, I said. I didn't tell anyone. Well, you shouldn't have told me. It's an amazing story, I said, my voice edging into anger. No, it's not, he insisted. It's unnatural. I want to say that we talked things through, talked until we understood why I felt compelled to tell that story and why he didn't want to hear it. I want to say that by the time we ate our shrimp and grits that night, we were laughing and holding hands, but that wasn't exactly the case. I stopped telling that story until now. Even when I finally tiptoed into writing about my first husband's death, I couldn't bring myself to write that ghost story because that purple splotch remained on the white nightgown for years. I continued wearing the bathroom, and nothing else ever stained. Some stories shouldn't be true, yet are, and those are the stories our souls crave and fear. That's how much he loves me, is what I want to be the tidy conclusion of this piece. But whether it's God or Rob who is the he, I can understand that it may not be possible for Steve or anyone else to be comfortable hearing my ghost story that way. I think we all have similar secrets we don't share. Or maybe, this is just a likely, maybe it's Steve who is the he, listening to this ghost story of mine, knowing that more must lurk around the corner.
Whoa, okay. That was kind of sad.
I feel like most Valentine's horror stories end up kind of sad.
I guess. Mine's a little funny.
Okay.
Mine's kind of funny, so it'll help it out a little bit. Okay. Here's what I'm thinking.
Okay.
It's written very beautifully. Like, you know, the adjective use, the eloquentness, you know, it's quite pretty.
Right.
So if it is a true story, this person really took their time to really be like, I'm gonna paint you a masterpiece here.
Okay.
Which I appreciate. But I don't know. It's like, it's very simple, but also could definitely still not be true.
Right.
I'm gonna go true.
You're gonna go
say
true.
I'm gonna say true. I think it's true.
That's interesting. Final guess, 100%.
100%.
Okay. This story is reportedly true. It's by an author called, and I know I'm going to butcher this name. Sorry if you ever hear this. Leslie Pietrzyk?
All right, Leslie.
Yeah, she is an author of multiple novels, and she wrote this story in an article and a couple places online, and she later based a book on the story of her first husband's death, Rob.
Dang, see the writing, there we go. That's why it was so pretty.
Also, the interesting comment, Steve, the boyfriend discussed also in the book, ended up marrying her. I think they are currently married, from what I
Wow. found. You know, I hope they're doing well.
I hope Rob did not just show up randomly.
Right. Me too. I hope they're having a great chill year with no supernatural presences.
Exactly, because there are no supernatural presences.
Okay, see, this is now we escalated it. I'm gonna use this opportunity to start talking about my story. Okay. My boyfriend and I met on Valentine's Day. I had always been one of those people who hated the holiday, mostly because I spent so many years celebrating it alone and single. I was not planning nor expecting to get into a relationship, but there was something about him that drew me in. And before I knew it, a year had gone by and he had asked me to move in with him on Valentine's Day as a sort of anniversary present. To be honest, I didn't want to. My commitment issues and fear of this relationship not working out kept me from accepting right away, but with a whole lot of convincing, I decided to move in with him. He had a two-bedroom apartment in a slightly shady area of town. It wasn't anything too crazy, but every now and then there would be weirdos and creepy men hanging around. We weren't the kind of couple who went out at night, so it was never that big of a deal, but it still made me kind of uneasy. I was home alone once, my boyfriend had left for the grocery store, and someone knocked on our door. I had been living there for about a month now, and nothing bad had happened until then. I opened the door and saw this creepy-looking man, and saw this creepy-looking guy on the other side. He was dressed in all black, had huge bags under his eyes, and had this sick-looking smile on his face. His eyes were probably the scariest part about them. They were blood red, and he was breathing heavily. "Can I help you?" I asked. He didn't say anything. He just stood there, breathing hard and smiling. Eventually, I closed the door on him and called my boyfriend, explaining to him the whole situation. When my boyfriend got home, the guy was gone, and we figured it was some drug addict who was completely lost out of his mind. A couple of days later, he was back, though. He knocked on the door again, and this time my boyfriend answered. The creepy guy still didn't do anything. He just stood there and stared. My boyfriend threatened to call the cops if he didn't leave, but the man just stayed there, smiling. My boyfriend closed the door and called the cops, but by the time the police got there, he was gone. The police did tell us, though, that this man might be stalking us, and they advised us to buy a door camera so we could give them a picture. My boyfriend bought one the next day, and we set it up. Nothing happened for a couple of weeks. But then, during one of the worst thunderstorms we've had that year, the man was back. I got an alert on my phone that someone was standing on our doorstep. I looked at the footage, and there he was, the creepy man, only this time he wasn't smiling. Actually, he looked a little angry. I showed it to my boyfriend, and we both watched as the man raised his fist and banged against the door. We did nothing, pretending that we weren't even home. The man got angrier and started pounding against the door. My boyfriend got up and walked up to the door. "Go away," he yelled. The man stopped pounding and just stood there for a few seconds. And then, to my horror, he turned around to look directly at the camera, and he started smiling that sick smile of his again. The man began pounding against the door again, almost as if he was trying to break it down. "I'm calling the cops," my boyfriend yelled. The knocking stopped once again, and the man smiled into the camera once more before walking away. Because of the storm, it took a while for the cops to come, but I kept watching the door footage until they arrived. When they came, we showed them the footage, but they told us they couldn't really do anything because the man hadn't technically done anything wrong. But a young police officer took pity on us. I mean, we were this young couple terrified out of our minds, and told us he would look further into the situation. We didn't hear back from the creepy man. But about 3 months after the incident, my boyfriend got a call from the police officer. The man had apparently spent time in jail for stalking a young girl and then killing her. He had escaped right around the time I first moved into the neighborhood, and the police had been searching for him ever since. I can't tell which is worse, that I could have died or that my fear of commitment has gotten worse. Nothing like a good dose of fear-based commitment issues to send us into this Valentine's Day season.
Oh my God. You know what? That was a good story. All right. Originally I was kind of thinking you'd throw a true one right here, but I think I'm gonna go just off the fact because I feel like honestly this is something that could happen given the random weirdos out there. But I feel like he could. I feel like the police would not have said they had nothing on him because I feel like he could have been charged for like loitering or trespassing or something, or like disturbance of peace in a neighborhood. So I'm gonna go false just off of the police saying there's nothing they can do.
Final answer, false.
Yes, false.
Arvind, to my complete dismay, You are correct.
Yes.
It is false. Fun fact, I wrote this
Oh,
because
that's
I could not find one. So
yeah, it's so hard to find.
I was like, I'll just write one. So, yes, this was my 10 at night, little extravaganza. I'm glad you had a
A
good time.
good story.
Thank you. Thank you. I was originally going to do something where I was going to make it almost like Paranormal Activity inspired, where like they were going to be haunted and then they were going to buy these cameras and then be freaked out and whatever. But then I
Yeah.
got on this train of like this creepy man. I was like, let's just keep him. I like him, you know, he's cool, he's creepy. Let's keep going with him. Let's see what happens.
He's cool. What if he appears at your doorstep next?
That I do have a Ring. I have a little Ring camera and I will be watching. I actually am such a little wimp. When somebody knocks on the door or rings the doorbell, I will watch them from the Ring camera until they leave. I refuse to answer the door. And like, I know what you guys are thinking of since we're like, they're literally like, you can basically talk to people through the Ring. I still won't do that. I'm such a wimp about people who knock on my door. I am not answering. I'm sorry. I'm just not doing that. Unless you are somebody I know and we had a plan for you to come to my house, I'm not answering that door.
Honestly, at this point, I don't. I also have, I think it's Nest. I don't have access to it anymore, so I don't really understand what the point is. Because I'm pretty sure, like, of everyone in my family, I think a majority of us do not have access to the camera.
What?
So we just open the
I'm like, we all have access to it, I guess, but I'm like the only one who regularly checks ours. So it's like, you're welcome. You're welcome for keeping all of us safe by
door
monitoring this door, you know, to keeping track of who's coming in and who's going out.
So if I just wear like a creepy mask right now and show up to your house unannounced for the next couple hours, banging on your door, you would just keep continuously checking and getting scared that there's someone outside.
I wouldn't continuously check because I would never X out of like the app. I would literally just sit there with my phone and like just watch you.
All
And just like wait for you to leave.
right, I'll do that next time then. Next
Great.
time you have
See?
a
Now
you
I
have a
but now I won't be scared because now I'll be like, oh, this is just Arvin. So maybe I will talk. But now
But
I'll
what
have
if
this
one
new
time it's
fear.
not?
Right. Now that's a new fear. Like, what if one time it's not?
I'll hire some neighbors. We'll just rotate shifts.
That's literally terrifying, though. Like somebody knocking on your door in a little mask. No, don't. No,
You know
please.
what? This is revenge for the watcher.
Revenge for the Watcher. Arvin's one story that he can never let go of.
I will be like 50 still imagining that thing.
Did you watch the Netflix show?
No, I refuse to.
Well, if you guys have watched the Netflix show, let us know if it's good or not. You know, I kind of didn't want to watch it because I watched the trailer and it looked super cheesy. So I was like, oh, I'm kind of out of this one. But if it is cool, I will give it a shot and I will kidnap Arvind and I will
Arvin.
force him to watch it. Well, I don't know if we ever told you guys about this. If you follow us on Instagram at Behind the Story, period between the I and N, shameless plug, you would have known this already. But Arvin and I have a Halloween tradition where we watch a horror movie on Halloween. And this year, I was like, let's watch two. Let's do it. I love horror movies. Arvin hates them. And so we watched Await Further Instructions, which is a great horror movie, by the way. If you guys are looking for a movie to watch tonight, that is a good one. And we were going to watch a second one. I was going to make him watch The Taking of Deborah Logan, also a great movie. But Arvin was so scared that we didn't watch it, and instead we watched the hit Disney Channel original movie Girl versus Monster, and then we read Letterboxd reviews after, and it was a beautiful way to spend the night.
I still stand by that decision and not watch the second movie. I will forever stand by it.
Well, next year we'll just have to watch three to make up for it, you know.
I disagree.
And there were a lot of highlights when we did this movie night. One of them in which during Await Further Instructions, Arvin started singing Earthquake by Tyler the Creator. Arvin also asked if the girl in Girl versus Monster was the actual monster and not the ghosts.
I think she is. I
She
still think she is.
definitely is. She definitely is.
100%.
I love Olivia Holt. I would die for Olivia Holt. But wow, she really something possessed her in that movie, and that was a good joke. I want compliments for that joke I just made.
7 out of 147.
What? Tough crowd.
That's all you
Come
get.
on.
Nothing more.
I'm just a girl out here trying to make some good puns.
Oh,
Society will always be against us, ladies.
enjoyed our final special episode and, in general, our final episode for season 3. Before we let you continue on with your lives, it's customary for Yeshvi to go through her usual emotional spiel, so get comfortable. This one might be long.
Okay, leave it to Arvin to be so very snarky about all of this. But to be fair, he's not wrong. Okay, I will begin to sound a little bit like a broken record. I know you guys, because I know you guys are avid listeners, have heard of this in every single one of our Valentine's Day and that one April Fool's Day episode from last season. And it's roughly the same thing, but there's always more to add because of your guys' overwhelming support. Thank you just so much from the bottom of both of our hearts. Thank you. We have been given the opportunity to talk to incredible people this season. We talked to Elizabeth Brundage, who was absolutely amazing. And we were able to talk to Patty Negri, who literally has worked with Arvin and I's absolute favorite person in the whole world, Mr. Zach Bagans. And these are just things that we would have never been able to accomplish if it weren't for you guys. We have the privilege of being listened to in countries all around the globe. We found out recently that we've topped true crime charts in Algeria, which is very exciting. And once again, would not have happened if it weren't for you guys. And it's just overwhelming, and we are so grateful. Thank you very much.
Seriously, we cannot thank you guys enough for all your support, and we hope that you keep checking back on us because season 4 will be here before you know it.
And to stay to up to date on all of these important announcements, don't forget to follow us on our social medias at Behind the Story on Instagram with a period between the I and N, and on Twitter with an underscore between the I and N.
And until we see, or I guess you hear us again, we hope you have an amazing 2023 that you keep remembering.
That there's always more to uncover behind the story.
See you next time.